So today we are continuing our discussion about the life of Narada Muni. And of course, understanding the very important life and principles derived from Narada Muni's life, it is helping us to understand the very great significance of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So last week we looked at verses in the fifth chapter of the first verse of the first canto, verses 23 to 31, and which described Narada Muni's meeting with the Bhaktivedantas. We heard how Narada Muni, in meeting with the Bhaktivedantas, he took their remnants of their prasadam, and we'll come back to this. We heard how he was born the son of a maidservant. He was the only son, so he was, you know, quite young, not properly educated, and still, as we understand from the purport, that the service of the devotee is more valuable than the service of the Lord, because although he was materially disqualified, apparently, we see how valuable is the service to the devotees, that it actually brought him to become an associate of the Lord, you know, gradually. Srila Prabhupada gives a nice... These are all different principles, of course, that I've got here on this flip chart. A lot of these principles you need to identify, which you did last week. We drew some, we got you to draw sketches, and you drew out many of these nice principles. So this is just a recap and perhaps fill in a few gaps. These principles, of course, have great significance for personal application. They give us a lot of faith. They show us how to apply ourselves to Krishna consciousness. They give us great confidence that we can, you know, by a very easy process of associating with devotees, hearing from them, serving them, taking their prasadam, advanced devotees, we can actually become elevated to the topmost position. And it also has a great preaching application, because we can also see that, therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is universally applicable and very easy to spread if we follow the same principles. Here, Srila Prabhupada in a lecture describes it: if you're in the spiritual position, giving others the opportunity to serve you, he'll be delivered. There's no question of understanding the philosophy. So Srila Prabhupada talking to his disciples, and of course all the followers to come, the grand disciples, that this is a principle that, you know, if you actually become nicely situated as a devotee, that if someone comes along, that they, whether they understand the philosophy or not, does not matter. If you are nicely situated as a devotee, and you can engage them, through you they engage in Krishna's service, then he'll actually be delivered. So Srila Prabhupada is passing on that legacy to us. It's a big responsibility, but it's a wonderful responsibility. So there you see personal application of this same principle.
That in itself, that you can give a whole class just on that one point, you know, how to, you know, use that principle properly and how not to misuse it and what have you.
Can you explain that in the spiritual position?
If you're in the spiritual position, Srila Prabhupada considered in the spiritual positions means chanting 16 rounds following the four regular principles.
And giving others an opportunity to serve, meaning, do you have to be a preacher, a scripture, can be anybody in his movement?
Anyone, on any platform.
Probably some service driven. Of course, you know, I'm not defending that. It says 16 rounds and following regulative principles.
Yeah.
But how about some service driven?
If you're chanting 16 rounds and following the four regular principles, Krishna, you'll be engaged in Krishna's service. That's practically an automatic, process. It's hard, if you're to chant 16 rounds and follow four regular principles is a sign of someone who really wants to serve Krishna. You know, there's a lot of determination there. And Prabhupada said many times, if you chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, everything you do after that is on the spiritual platform. That's his. And under that, if we're not chanting our 16 rounds, and he would consider animal platform. There's certainly a little bit in between, but we have to be, that's spiritual platform. As we move on through the 24th verse of the 5th chapter, Vedavadanam, these Bhaktivedantas, it indicates pure devotees. Tulya Darshana, they were impartial, they blessed Narada with their causeless mercy. And Prabhupada makes the point that, without being disciplined, no one can become successful in regards to Narada Muni. Having been blessed by those Bhaktivedantas, certainly showed some nice qualities of discipline and self-control, and that meant that he was, could become successful by making use of their mercy. So there's some nice principles there. And again, in the lecture on that subject, the more we become advanced, naturally we get the mercy of the spiritual master and Krishna. So without being disciplined, without actually developing some qualities, showing our determination, we can't become successful. But if we do become disciplined, then we naturally attract further mercy of Krishna and the spiritual master. He went on to in the 25th verse, Apashta Kilavisha, by once taking the remnants, all his sins were eradicated. Very important principle that can be derived from his life, the powerful effect of taking the remnants of prasadam, mahaprasadam, from the pure devotees. And we see that the result is that pure devotion is infectious. So if devotees, we're looking up here, if you're in the spiritual position, right? So if you're on the platform of devotion, pure devotion, it's infectious. Proportionately with the purity of your devotion, it's infectious in a good sense. And by that association, all obstacles are removed. It eradicates sin. It removes many of the anarthas on the path of devotional service.
Mercy of the spiritual master.
Yes.
Just how is that generally manifest? Because We have very really gentle relations with God.
So, what does it mean that we attract their mercy?
Yeah, how does that mean?
How does it practically manifest? because Krishna is sits within the heart, so as the via media, that Krishna understands our desire, our sincerity, our honesty, and the intensity of our desire in trying to please the spiritual master in Krishna, and therefore the result, the blessings of Krishna and the spiritual master are just automatically awarded. Because, you know, Krishna is there. Krishna is there as a via media. Also, Krishna reveals to the spiritual master. Therefore, in different ways. it can be, as general as, the spiritual master just seems to have a very favorable and pleasant sort of thoughts when he thinks about that disciple. Krishna is inspiring that way. If if there's something going wrong with the disciple, the spiritual master may just somehow, just something's not sitting right, because the super soul within the heart will inspire, and the spiritual master, they become very expert, of course, by the grace of the Lord, that they can just look at the disciple, or the disciple may give some correspondence, or they may see the disciple serving, or they may just they may have a dream, or they may just somehow or another Krishna just lets them know. So the spiritual master becomes aware that he's generally happy with that disciple or not, and the Krishna who's sitting within the heart is also completely aware. So for instance, if we act in such a way to please the spiritual master, we may be thinking, but he didn't even see what I've done, right? He's not here. I never say he's missed the whole thing. That was the best thing I've ever, he's missed it all. But we have to understand that Krishna, sitting within the heart, saw everything. And therefore, Krishna noticed that attempt to please the spiritual master was there, and the result is automatically awarded. Is that good? So it attracts the mercy of the spiritual master and Krishna. They work together. Hare Krishna. They're a good team. So we describe the pure devotion. It's infectious. Association with devotees, someone serves them, they eat their prasadam, they see them, they hear them, somehow it all destroys the sins and it all removes the obstacles. It's practically impossible for someone to actually serve Krishna. You sort of look around the world, the chances of people just now without the association of devotees somehow or another serving Krishna is just an impossibility. It's just not going to happen. But then that is, some people may hear about the devotees, they may read books or whatever like that, and they may take up that, there may be spark some desire. They may get one of Prabhupada's books and desire, yes, I would like to
So, but again, it's still until they, when they associate with devotees, everything becomes very practical and easy, and they get a sense of Krishna consciousness very easily. Otherwise, just the, you know, it's difficult to understand. Even if you read the philosophy, it's very difficult to understand and put it into practice and to you know, relate all the different aspects of the philosophy. You know, it's just not possible. And then you see a devotee serving, you think, oh, that's how it's done. You know, just like deity worship. You know, you imagine if you read about deities. But, you know, first of all, if you've never seen a deity, right? So you read, about deity worship in one of Prabhupada's books, and you're thinking, you know, what is a deity? You know, some people are like that, never even, you know, what is a deity? You know, is it an actual statue? You know, is it something physical? Is it something, you know? And then it can be, but then you know, you come to the temple, and you see the devotees just there in the deity room. Ah, that's deity worship. It's just all, you know. So. In many different ways, by destroying sinful reactions, by just the seeing a devotee in action and hearing from them, all the obstacles become removed in many different ways. And of course, you know, the strength, you know, by associating with devotees, you get such a strength. It's like you know, when you're swimming with the current, it just you just get pushed along in the same direction with everyone else. So it makes it very, very easy. And that infection, what does it mean? It means to imbibe the taste of pure devotion. So you naturally, that taste that the devotees are relishing in their devotional service, you imbibe that taste as well. In the purport there, Srila Prabhupada describes, you know, for this verse 25 in the 5th chapter, Srila Prabhupada describes the process from anatha nivritti to prema bhakti. There's anatha nivritti is, of course, removing the obstacles and the anathas, distraction, removal of unwanted things.
Mm-hmm. But the person, you know, once an outsider, he associates with the devotee, you know, you said how he gets the taste, you know, and he increases. But his sin has to come down too, right? He may be a sinful person.
Yes.
So unless his sins comes down, you know, he cannot release Krishna consciousness.
Well, actually, yeah, but by that association, it actually eradicates sins just by associating devotees. Imperceptibly. just a funny story that comes to my mind, just to, you know, show you how something difficult, you know, something simple is difficult when you're not associated with devotees. I read the Bhagavad Gita before I ever met a devotee, and I read the Nectar Devotion as well before I met a devotee. And I was working as a landscape gardener, and I understood you had to offer everything to Krishna. So, but I just couldn't quite, you know, work it out how to properly do that. So, you know, as a landscape gardener, there's a lot of filling up wheelbarrows full of dirt, and you know, so I'd fill up my wheelbarrow full of dirt, and then I'd walk it over and tip it out where it had to go, and I'd say, "There you are, Krishna, that's for you. I'm offering you this everything. There's a wheelbarrow full of dirt." So, you know, everything I was doing like that, I was trying to offer to Krishna. I was thinking, you know, what does he want with a wheelbarrow full of dirt? But, you know, if he wants it, he can have it. Now, the thing that, of course, did not really occur to me was when I went to get my pay packet. Somehow or another, I forgot it then. Oh, this is for Ganga. Oh, yeah, Danny, that's it. This is for me. So, you know, but I didn't realize that until I was a devotee. And I thought back on it, I thought, I was quite happy to give him a wheelbarrow full of dirt, this, that and the other, but I never ever thought about it when I got my pay packet, you know, how to offer this. That was like, you know, here comes Friday night sort of thing. So, yes. So, and then meeting the devotees, of course, everything falls into place. So, verse 26, his taste for hearing, so he imbibes this the same taste for pure devotion, and that taste is the taste of hearing and chanting about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It increases. Again, as we know, that by hearing, that also clears away the sins. One becomes liberated from mundane association and becomes attracted to the Lord. And one can become one of the associates of the Lord. So, this is very powerful, a very powerful step, because generally our minds are very much attracted to material association, and we like to hear, you know, about so many different mundane things. But when by hearing about the glories of the Lord, it actually turns our attention back towards the Lord, and that liberates us from all sorts of mundane association through hearing. There's two different ways to associate. When you hear about something and you become attached to that, you're associating with that mundane thing just by developing attachment. So attachment to something is actually associating with it. And we know the story of the two sannyasis. You know that the two sannyasis who were they came to the river, and there was a young, very attractive woman, and she wanted help to cross the river. And one of the sannyasis picked her up and carried her across the river. So when they got to the other side, then they walked on, and they walked on for a fair bit. And one of the sannyasis said, "I can't believe that you carried that woman across, you know, the river, because you're a sannyasi." And the other sannyasi said, "I left her back at the river. I can't believe you're still carrying her in your heart, all the way up to here." So, you know, he was actually more associating by keeping that attachment. He couldn't stop thinking about that young, beautiful woman. There's two different ways of association. By hearing, it liberates us from mundane association, turns our attention to the Lord. Narada Muni realized, of course, in the next verse that, you know, he should engage his gross and subtle body in the devotional service of the Lord. And then the next verse describes it as a flow of devotional service began, the coverings of Rajas and Tamas vanished. So, you know, we're seeing a progression from Sadhu Sangha, you know, initial faith, Sadhu Sangha, Anatha Nivritti, you know, Ruchi, and the Shakti, and this flow of devotion really is describing, you know, basically the dawning of Prema Bhakti appearing there. And that really just washes away the coverings of the modes of material nature. So therefore, coming to that very pure stage of bhakti, he developed the nice qualifications that he became attached to those devotees, obedient, freed from sins, faithful, subjugated, and a strict follower of those devotees. And these, as Prabhupada mentions, are signs of a devotee determined to achieve success in this lifetime. all very nice, wonderful principles that we can learn from his own life. And of course, we remember in the very beginning, actually it's at the beginning of the next chapter, you know, where Śrīla Vyāsadeva asked Narada Muni that, you know, what happened after you met the Bhaktivedanta's Sadhrita preacher, Saddhama preacher. Yeah. As inquiring from the spiritual master, by inquiring from the spiritual master is a very important principle how one can make progress. And we come up to the 30th verse, that they instructed him in the most confidential knowledge as they were leaving, which is instructed by the personality of Godhead himself. So again, some very important points here that Prabhupada points out, because it's understood by devotees only. Knowledge of devotional service is far, far above knowledge of impersonal Brahman. Generally, the impersonalists can understand up to impersonal Brahman, but they will struggle to understand things. So devotional service is really understood by devotees only. It's a postgraduate. pure devotional service is the most confidential knowledge. So there was a question there, you know, what is the most confidential knowledge? It has a couple of different components. Pure devotional service, that Prabhupada mentions, that's the most confidential knowledge. By that knowledge, so by the knowledge of pure devotional service, he could clearly understand the influence of the energy of the Lord Sri Krishna. And by that, one can return to him. So, by understanding pure devotional service, one can understand Krishna, and by understanding Krishna, of course, one becomes attached to Krishna, and one can, you know, engage in devotional service and return to him. Prabhupada mentions in the purport to the 31st verse that it's the desire of the Lord that all conditioned souls come back to him by giving up all engagements in the material world. This is the most confidential knowledge. Right. So, we put, you know, so there's a couple of there's a couple of quotes there where Prabhupada says this is the most confidential knowledge. I think the question in our Purva Svajaya questions asks you, you know, what is the most confidential knowledge? Is it got 30 or 31 after it? 30 to 31. See, so there's a one is it's referring to pure devotional service, because knowledge of mixed devotional service is certainly confidential knowledge, but most confidential is knowledge of pure devotional service. By that knowledge, one can certainly understand Krishna with all his energies, and that enables one to return to the spiritual world. And the desire of Krishna is that all the conditioned souls rotting in material existence return to him. So taking up that service, if pure devotional service is the most confidential knowledge, what is that pure devotional service? Delivering those, fulfilling this desire of the Lord. So you can almost couple it. The pure devotional service of to Krishna is the most confidential knowledge. What is that service? That is delivering all the conditioned souls back to the spiritual world. That is pure devotional service. So there's a couple of aspects to the answer to that question, really. In other words, you know, if someone said yes, pure devotional service is most confidential knowledge, and then someone says, well, what is that pure devotional service? Oh. So then if you can understand that, you have that most confidential knowledge. Well, that pure devotional service is delivering the conditioned souls back to the spiritual world, because that's the desire, that is the
very dear desire of the Lord. And we know that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, there is no servant more dear to me, nor will there ever be, than the one who preaches his message.
More confidential knowledge is devotional service mixed, is it? Mixed devotional service.
Yeah, that's confidential. Mixed devotional service is confidential.
More confidential or confidential?
It's more confidential. I'll get my notes. There are different degrees of confidentiality. Here's a quote by Vishwanath Chakravarti the Kaur. This is his commentary to verse 30. He says, Gyana Shastra has a prevalence of monistic gyan. That means that, you know, knowledge about the impersonal understanding of the Lord, that's gyan. Confidential scripture consists of a predominance of gyan mixed with some bhakti. So it becomes confidential when there's knowledge of spirit and a little bit of bhakti, at least some bhakti. Is it more confidential? Is that which is predominantly bhakti mixed with a little mixture of gyan? So that's, yeah. And then most confidential scripture is pure bhakti, which was given to Uddhava and Brahma in the Bhagavatam and to Arjuna in the Gita. And, you know, they taught this also to Narada Muni. Okay, let's have a look at chapter 6. We know that Narada Muni.
Explain the process of Karma Yoga.
You might have missed that class. Were you here? You may have missed that. We did do a class on that. Hands up who were here for that. Yep. Okay. Anyone who may have missed, just check with some of the devotees. We do have, there are some notes on the points that we covered somewhere here. If you want, you know, after the class, you can either, some of the devotees can either, they may have those notes, or you can have a look here, and just anything you missed there, have a look at that. It's a big topic, but in essence, Narada Muni was explaining that we turn the enjoying propensity into a propensity to satisfy the Lord. So they're doing the same activities, but previously there's just, they're doing the activity of karma with an idea to enjoy themselves, and then by association with devotees, by hearing about the Lord, they transform that enjoying spirit into a desire to satisfy the Lord. When that becomes predominant, they also begin to hear and chant about the Lord, and a desire to know how to satisfy him
and then it becomes a little mixed in the bhakti, but predominantly bhakti, and you know, gradually by association that mixed bhakti turns into pure bhakti. That's the essence of it. But so you can probably listen to the talk that we did on that and check these notes. And yeah, so here we are. Srila Vyasadeva asked just before I go on, so everyone's happy that they've covered all the Purva Svadvaya questions up to the end of chapter 5. Yeah, any that they feel they want clarity on, I think we've covered them. But the first one in chapter 6, of course, is explaining the meaning of Sad Dharma Pricha. Pricha. Which is the desire to inquire from the spiritual master. Mentioned as the fifth item in the Nectar Devotion, chapter 6. Srila Vyasadeva asked some questions of Narada. How did you pass your life after initiation? How did you attain this body? Because Narada has this wonderful spiritual body. And how is it that the subject matter of all of this is which happened, you know, prior to this day of Brahma is still fresh in your memory? So they're the questions. And then the next thing, of course, is to analyse the nature, the import of Narada's mother being bitten by a serpent in verses 6 to 10, which is what we're looking at now. Srila Prabhupada gives a prelude to this. It's almost a summary of what we've just discussed and a prelude of what's to come in his purport by just summarising that association with devotees leads to a quick change in life with regards to one's spiritual advancement. So here we see Narada Muni, the only son, bound with affection by his mother, a child of 5 years, all of a sudden, influenced by time, his mother is bitten by a serpent and dies. And the principle there, of course, is that Krishna, in the form of time, is dragging a soul, a sincere soul, nearer to God. And he took it as a special mercy of the Lord and started for the north, of course, which is another important principle in the way a devotee, the Lord here is reciprocated with Narada Muni, making arrangements to bring him to him, and the devotee actually sees things always as the mercy of the Lord. And that's mentioned in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, I think it's verse 8 in the purport, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. There's some nice quote there in the purport that Prabhupada describes how one sees everything in relationship to the mercy of the Lord. Have you got that there? There's some. What's that?
It's just cook sentence, English.
Let me have a look. Is that 10:8? How do you scroll down? I'll look for it later. It's somewhere around there. There's a nice group of two or three sentences which sums up this mood of the devotees. But he saw it as the special mercy of the Lord, and he immediately started from the north. He took the, you know, took the opportunity that, you know, he's just heard from these Bhaktivedantas about devotional service, and he's acquired, you know, this taste. You know, I want to serve the Lord as well, and you know, I want to glorify the Lord, and I want to find the Lord. You know, and so he, you know, this opportunity, he's seen that here's an opportunity. He's just taken it straight away.
It's almost opportune at the age of 5, because it's such innocence and sincerity, in a way.
Yeah, especially at the age of 5.
Yeah, but it can be quite dogged about what they want.
Yeah. So, you know, he's certainly just a very young child. Because, you know, he'd be somewhat elevated as a child. I mean, in his previous life he was a demigod, so he's, you know, it's not as if he's coming up from the animal species into the human life. So he's a fallen demigod, and he's just been purified by, you know, association. So, you know, there's something, you know, at the age of 5, there's still you see in this pastime that Krishna does give him some special mercy. You know, when you're a 5-year-old child and you take off like he does to the north looking for God, you know, it invokes the mercy of the Lord, naturally. The Prabhupada gives many a class on how, you know, there's a trend that at the fag end of one's life, when one's tried to enjoy the material world and there's nothing left to live for, and, you know, you just can't enjoy anymore, and then you give all your wealth to your family, and then you turn up on Krishna, now I'm ready to serve you. You know, thanks. You know, yeah. So, you know, there's certainly and I've heard several of you know, Prabhupada and others say, you know, there's certainly a special mercy from Krishna when someone, if they give their youth, you know, to Krishna, it is, you know, they're giving something quite valuable there. You know, that's something special.
Yeah. Is there any significance of Narada Muni traveling towards the north?
Many, you know, sages and people who retire from home or kingdom or what have you, they generally head north. You know, the Pandavas, and, you know, the Pandavas' wives, and I'm not sure which way Vidura headed, but it is an auspicious direction, generally, because you know, especially from India, that northern direction, even, you know, way towards the Arctic,
you know, you've just got that solitude. And
the Himalayas.
Yeah, the Himalayas, and you know, it's just a place of for austerity in solitude, and you know, forests and what have you. So.
But if you're north of that, if you're in Russia, you head south.
If you're in Russia, you'd probably still be heading towards the Arctic, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and I
thought
the significance
of the Himalayas. Look, I heard a class the other day by Prabhupada. And I think it was in relationship to Yudhisthira Maharaj, where he headed north, and Prabhupada was saying that his understanding is that he actually went towards the Arctic. Yeah. Because it's just so remote. Yeah. We'll get to that, you know, we're coming up to that, and I'll fish out that quote, but you know, it's quite surprising that. Yes, yeah.
Not in India, north of India.
Very north, yeah.
Part of India.
In the north, yeah. So, you know, he's picked it up somewhere from his association with the Bhaktivedantas. And we see that in verses 11 to 13, he travelled through all different varieties of places, like a Paribrajakacharya. And what is the duty of a Paribrajakacharya, one may ask? I can hear your brains ticking over. To experience all varieties of God's creation, to gain faith in God and strength of mind, as well as to enlighten the inhabitants with the message of God. Another principle here, Prabhupada points out, that we need not imitate great personalities like Narada and Lord Chaitanya, that, you know, there will be many people that at the end of their life or at some stage, you know, being drawn somehow or another closer to God, and, you know, family affairs and what have you, you know, start to no longer a viable place, that people need not necessarily imitate them and just travel all over to very remote and difficult places, that they can actually find a holy place or a temple and you know, hear and chant about the glories of the Lord. And that's also you know, they will experience hearing and chanting and preaching amongst many people in a nicely populated place where they can preach to many people. They will also experience many different varieties of life. That will also give them a lot of faith, a lot of strength of mind. We know the preaching, you know just even preaching around one temple, Melbourne, going out daily meeting people gives you, you know, you really have to strengthen your mind and your faith to be able to do it, otherwise you cannot do it.
For all religions, even if Christians,
do
you find
knocking
your door and preaching in the city
centre? Yeah.
So
they can make it tough.
So the other thing is, Narada Muni, first he took the association of advanced devotees.
Yes.
And then he started walking, and he was going further. Then later on, he did not take any association, isn't it? He was all by himself, right? Of course he did that. He had the association of the Supreme Lord, but he did not have any association henceforth, did he? How could he maintain his total association in the same?
He maintained the association with the Bhaktivedantas by remembering their instructions and following their instructions. As we described before, that you associate also by your attachment. So, you know, because he and it described that, he, you know, one of his qualities we saw on the previous page, he was very attached. He became a lover of those devotees. So, you know, that attachment, that being a lover of the devotees, you know, that is you're associating, you know, within the heart always. So if the opportunity may not be there to associate with others, still he was always associating with them through that love, through that attachment within the heart. By following, you know, and he was a strict follower, so following the instructions, there's Vani and Vapu. Vani is, you know, we associate physically, you know, with a devotee, or Vapu we associate by remembering their words and, you know, following the instruction of their words. There's two different ways of association. So that association, it was there in that way, through Vapu. We see Prabhupada did the same thing. Prabhupada came to the West and there was you know, very little opportunity, practically nil, for him to associate with devotees. And you know, he had to make devotees, and then he had to make people to associate with, make devotees. But you know, he always associated with his guru and with all the associates of Chaitanya and Krishna by always hearing and chanting about them. By reading Srimad Bhagavatam, we see in one purport, Srila Prabhupada, you know, thanks Narada Muni for appearing on the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, he considered that Narada Muni was present, you know, in the Bhagavatam. Thank you for being here with me, like that. So then he, Prabhupada mentions in the purport, the 14, that he can, you know, such a devotee can meet the needs of the body by the gifts of nature, you know, eating and sleeping. One doesn't need a lot. He sat down under a banyan tree, began to meditate upon the super soul within the heart. Tears began to roll down his eyes, and without delay the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared on the lotus of my heart. That's it. So now, previously we described that Narada Muni, through his association and serving the Bhaktivedantas, has come from the beginning stages of bhakti to the, you know, beginning stages of prema bhakti. And therefore, you know, these symptoms of bhava are manifest. As Prabhupada says, you know, this bhava stage is attained after one has transcendental affection. Transcendental affection, of course, not meaning a materially based sentimental attitude towards God. People may, you know, mistake, but here, transcendental affection, transcendental means that there's no more attachment to anything material, and there's only attachment and affection to the Supreme Lord.
So maybe very soon he achieved the bhava state, maybe because of the innocence of.
He achieved that because he associated with the Bhaktivedantas, and what they asked him to do, he did strictly and with full faith. So because he had the association and he, you know,
took advantage of that to his best capacity, then he very quickly elevated. But no, it's not just due to his age. But as we said, certainly the Lord is very merciful when someone's, you know, giving the best years of their life immediately without hesitation. You know, the Lord appreciates the taste of that sort of, you know, offering. Not, you know, as we say, there's nothing left. You know, I've waited to the fag end of my life now. You know, whatever's left, I'll give to you. I've given, you know, it's all gone to my family, and you know, I've come here a beggar to serve you, Krishna.
So,
Prabhu,
just trying to relate the two examples that you've just given. One is, you know, that what you just said, the Lord appreciates the prime time that you give towards devotional service, or, you know, basically, you know, one doesn't wait for achieving something and then, you know, and the other example, basically, like what Prabhu just told, that he was saying, that, you know, the innocence, the simplicity.
Yes, simplicity, yes, yeah.
I was just trying to relate it to the previous example that you gave of yourself, that simplicity by which you are offering the wheelbarrow.
I'm sure.
I take it like that, you know, that was just, that's the simplicity, what else, you know?
I guess so.
Do you think which one is better? I don't know. What do you think that, you know, have you improved after that, or, you know, was that better?
Me? No, yeah. I'm still offering wheelbarrowfuls of dirt, but no, it's a good point that, you know, that just the simplicity of Narad, no duplicity, that is therefore one of the terms for the Lord is, is it something? Bhava Grahi Janardhan. That he takes the intention of your service, you know. So that just simplicity, without any duplicity. And of course, children like that, aren't they? They're not duplicitous. They're just, you know, just open hearted, you know. And so, yeah, there is a special quality in that. That's a fact, yeah. Even if it's not done properly, and the Lord will accept that simple and pure-hearted offering. Yeah. Mm. That's a fact. So, we're coming up to... let's ask the question to describe Narada's experience in meditation. Yes. So here, of course, we've got the Supreme Lord has appeared on the lotus of his heart. Being exceedingly overpowered by feelings of happiness, every part of my body became separately enlivened. Srila Prabhupada paraphrases that in the purport. After seeing the Lord, all the senses become fully awakened to render service unto the Lord. So then, in the next verse, it describes, upon losing that form, I suddenly got up, being perturbed. Srila Prabhupada draws out some very nice principles, that one who has seen that form is not satisfied with anything else. And life after life, we're actually searching after that form. despite my attempts to concentrate with eagerness, I could not see him anymore, and thus he became dissatisfied and aggrieved. So again, there is no mechanical process by which we can make the Lord appear, by which we can have a vision of the Lord. It depends upon his causeless mercy, in the same way that Prabhupada would give the example that we cannot make the sun appear before us. We have to wait for the sun to rise of its own accord, and we just go on waiting for the opportune moment to go on discharging the duty in devotional service. You know, we can't bind Krishna by any contract or arrangement, or you know, bind him in some agreement, or make him feel obligated in any way. But you know, he agrees to become bound by the tie of unalloyed devotion that he sees there in the devotee.
And yet, when we talked about Lord Jagannath, people going up to Lord Jagannath in Mayapur and making agreements.
And making
agreements with him. And he sort of. If you do this and the other, I mean, I will do this and the other, you give me a chance.
So they can get a child, they can get a husband, but they can't get Jagannath. In fact, it's actually described in by Gaura Kishore Das Babaji that one of the things that Lord Nityananda does is that he does award people the results of the you know, benedictions that they seek, because in that way they'll actually go away and leave the pure devotees to execute their devotional service in peace without the disturbance of having those people around. And Lord Nityananda will do that.
In, on the similar grounds, in Tirupati, you know, some people have Tirupati Balaji as a business partner. If they get more money, they put more money in the hundi. It's a contract.
So yeah, it's an important principle for us to understand, but it is a principle that never really occurs to a lot of people who approach the temples of the Lord. So. The Supreme Lord spoke to Narada just to mitigate his grief. Prabhupada describes, this is not possible for others. Talking about those who are in the probationary state of regulative devotional service, it was a special gift for Narada. Special gift means that, you know, in his present body, and you know, very very quickly, Narada, you know, has within a short period of time, he's been, you know, and within that lifetime, he's been able to come from the beginning of devotional service to a very elevated platform, to the platform where the Lord is actually spoken to him. And just to mitigate his grief. So seeing that Narada Muni was actually feeling great pangs of separation after not being able to see that form of the Lord spoke to him. But many people who follow religions and who perhaps happen to be senior members of their religious institutions will claim these days that God is talking to them. Very common. God is talking to them, God is talking through them, including, you know, people like the one that shot John Lennon, and Jesus told him to do it. There's so many murderers, you know. Oh, God told me to do it. You know, what to speak of people who are not even practicing any real religious principles, you know, as if it's possible for them to hear God. Prabhupada, even those who are actually properly practicing strictly the regular principles of devotional service, even for them, you know, it's not possible. And, you know, even for others who perhaps rise above the regular principles of devotional service and come to a spontaneous and pure platform of devotional service, even for them, you know, it's not necessarily that they're going to hear God speak to them. There's a special gift for Narada and, you know, others who have that. It's not a very common thing. It's quite a rare. That's the point we should understand. And he did so as a direct reciprocation with Narada Muni's love. You know, he's not saying. you know, sending some mundane message, you know, to be just passed out to society, you know, put one each way on the, you know, horse number 5 in the 5th race at Randwick. You know, there's no material motive for people in society. It's just a direct reciprocation between the Lord, special gift for Narada Muni. So Krishna describes that during this life you will not be able to see me anymore, and those who are incomplete and not free from anathas can hardly see me. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada describes that to be completely free means to be free from, you know, the mode of goodness also, material mode of goodness. And therefore, Prabhupada mentions that going to the forest is a symptom of the mode of goodness, whereas the neophytes are actually more recommended to go to a temple of the Lord, which is a transcendental place. And pure devotees, as he describes in the same purport, recommended to preach the Lord, the glories of the Lord. That is also, you know, a completely transcendental activity. It was just going to the forest looking for the Lord. Certainly, it's very wonderful, but there's traces of attachment, taint of the mode of goodness there. So, if we were to ask, what was Narada's material taint? Who's going to dare to say something against Narada Muni? He's in the mode of goodness? Is it little taint? He's apprehensive, isn't he? No, that's a...
The truth, I think, in the purport, that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
as well. Yeah.
It wasn't the case?
That he didn't have any sort of
material desire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. The fact that the quote you're saying is from the next purport, which is correct, that in verse 22 that he says, "You have only once seen my person just to increase your desire for me, and the more you hanker for me, the more you become free from material desires." And Prabhupada mentions there in the purport that Narada had no material desires. No material desires in Narada. Just to increase his desires, he was so advised. So, Narada, of course, at this stage, we have to understand that he's on the platform of Prema Bhakti, you know, the beginning of Prema Bhakti. He has no material desires. Yet there is, you know, just a slight taint, just a residue of the result of, you know, associating with the material energy, you know, over time, that, you know, the tiniest little trace that's certainly not the modes of passion or ignorance, but just a slight little taint of serving the Lord through the mode of ignorance, through the mode of goodness, through the mode of sattva. The mode of sattva, of course, that we serve the Lord and it brings us to a point of peacefulness, tranquility, a devotee who's untainted by even the mode of goodness does not care about his own peace and tranquility. He just cares about he'll sacrifice his own peace and tranquility to fulfill the desire of the Lord. Therefore we see in Narada Muni's next life he doesn't actually go to the forest, but he just goes anywhere and everywhere just to glorify the Lord without really any regard for his own peace and tranquility or salvation or what have you. Slightest little taint, but certainly no material desires. He's not he's not doing business with God, you know, he's not approaching God for anything. He's not really even approaching God for, you know, his own peace and tranquility or elevation. But there's a slight immaturity in his prema bhakti. You see? So, you know, because of that, he's not intentionally, as Prabhupada says, there's no material desires. He's not intentionally approaching the Lord for some benefit, even in the mode of goodness.
But because there's he's at the very immature stage of prema bhakti, there's a little taint there, unintentionally, which is different from someone who's intentionally, you know, they're serving the Lord for their peace and prosperity and elevation and liberation, you know. So it's sort of unintentional just due to his immaturity. Therefore, you know, the Lord is saying that, you know, just to increase your desire for me. So he's wants to take him from the child, you know, immature stage of prema bhakti to the fully youthful, vigorous, full blooming feature of prema bhakti. Which brings out one of the principles is that, you know, the more one is engaged in transcendental devotional service, the more he hankers for it. That's the principle that the Lord is employing here. It's the principle, the nature of devotional service. And of course, the more one hankers for it, that's important, because the intensity of one's devotional service is important, because by that one can experience the presence of the Lord. By intense devotional service, what's that?
It says, what general principles can be drawn from Narada's experience of unsuccessful endeavors to see the form of the Lord a second time?
Yeah. Well, what general principles? That no mechanical process can evoke the presence of the Lord. It depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. So that's one principle that underlies it. And we can give the example of the sun to illustrate that. So then what can, you know, help us to, you know, experience the presence of the Lord? He's bound by unalloyed devotion. So this is, he's not bound by any mechanical process, but he does agree to be bound by unalloyed devotion. Therefore, how do we demonstrate that? We demonstrate that by waiting for the opportune moment and go on discharging our devotional service. And he's attracted to that.
Opportune moment. Elaborate.
Well, it's the opportunity is for Krishna, in one sense, that we perform our devotional service, and when Krishna sees the opportune moment, he will reciprocate, you know, he will highlight a particular intensity that has occurred within our devotional service, especially if it's been sustained, and he will take the opportune moment to reward us with, you know, the experience of the presence of the Lord. In the same way that, you know, we deal with children, that you know, children always want to be rewarded. We know that in order to cultivate good habits,
in children, we should be on the lookout that when they do something, rather than punishing them every time they do something wrong, which is what a lot of parents do, every time the children does something wrong, you punish them. It creates a lot of bad habits. But if you do a different way, is it, you know, you wait for the opportunity moment when they actually do something good and really highlight, oh, that was, and point it out to them. It's actually a better way of creating nice nature and habits in children. So you wait for that opportune moment when the children does something like that and you reward them. See, okay. that opportune moment is when the Lord rewards us. And that's just completely at His mercy, in His own timing. There's an opportune moment coming up. We can't really detect it. We're just dependent upon His mercy and timing. Yeah. Any other questions? Have we covered everything so far? All the. So the Lord declared, we've jumped over 23, we'll come back to it. The Lord declared in verse 24 of chapter 6 that even at the time of creation or annihilation, your remembrance will continue by my mercy. So that certainly answers one of Srila Vyasadeva's, well, his last question. How do you have remembrance of such things? By the mercy of the Lord. And because Srila Prabhupada highlights an important principle here that devotional service under the Lord accumulates. So it accumulates on this principle that actually it's the Lord is actually keeping watch. He's got his little black book and putting the ticks in the crosses. Prabhupada said that. And therefore by his mercy, if the Lord wants someone to remember, because the Lord remembers, he can spark the, you remember you did this? He can remind. If there was no one else to remember, this principle, our devotional service couldn't accumulate if there wasn't someone watching and keeping track. So therefore, of course, it follows on that accumulates. So what's the result of that accumulation is that it accumulates until one's eligible to associate with the Supreme Lord. That's a nice principle that Srila Prabhupada draws out of that. Narada Muni, he's had this wonderful vision of the Lord. The Lord has then removed himself from the sight of Narada Muni, and Narada Muni tried to invoke that form of the Lord again but could not do so, and he is began to chant and travel all over chanting the name and the fame and the glories of the Supreme Lord. So of course
because we follow in the footsteps of great devotees, like, you know, if someone's actually seen the Supreme Lord by their wonderful devotional service, it makes sense that, you know, we follow them because, you know, they've been successful. When someone's successful, people, you know, you've got some results, so whatever you did, I'm going to do as well. So here Narada Muni, he's travelling everywhere, chanting the holy names of the Lord. Prabhupada mentions that, you know, that's our only business. That's the devotee's only business. Of course, it becomes our own to preach for others' welfare. So, at the end, after some time, he met with death. And the example is given that just as there is lightning and illumination occurs simultaneously. Which means that, as Prabhupada points out in the purport, that he changes his material body and develops a spiritual body. Just like one may make a statement that, you know, as I'm walking, someone is milking the cow. They're occurring at the same time.
Yeah. Is it possible for someone to experience an opportune moment to get the mercy of the Lord, see the Lord, associate with Him, experience the enlightening senses and all of that, and fall after, or live a life which is not completely regulated?
People can see the deity form of the Lord. They're actually seeing Krishna, and you know, fall down to, you know, from devotion to.
I mean, not the deity form, but beyond.
Well, the difference is that. You know, the point I'm making there is that one that Prabhupada would make, you know, with such questions is that in one sense, seeing the Lord is not so difficult. But you know, the understanding, the realization that, you know, I am actually seeing the Lord, that's very elevated. That's, you know, that comes with bhava. You know, that's where one's transcendental senses, as we described, are actually awakened, you know, and enlivened. And you know, there's by one who doesn't have appreciation that they're seeing the Lord, you know, they may get the same thrill as if they're seeing stone. But imperceptibly, they're becoming liberated. Whereas someone, we see Lord Chaitanya, you know, he went into the temple, he saw the same Jagannath, he didn't see wood, he just fainted. That's because when there's bhava, when there's prema, he actually understood. His senses just, you know, just convulsed with ecstasy. Yes, I'm seeing the Lord. But it's not just an intellectual thing. The senses just become, you know, absolutely enlivened, and you know, happiness just floods the body. So, it's easy to see the Lord. Anyone can walk in to see the deity, but to actually perceive the presence of the Lord with one's spiritual senses, which happens on the platform of bhava and prema, that is very difficult. So if one has seen the form of the Lord, not been on the platform of bhava or prema, then such a person can fall down. It's very rare for someone to fall down from the platform of bhava, but that can happen. But on the platform of prema bhakti, they don't. So we see that Bilva Mangala at the core actually had achieved the platform of bhava bhakti, and he did fall down.
So, you know, it's rare, but even on Bhava Bhakti one can still, but on the Prema Bhaktis don't. So if someone has been and you know the Lord, you know, apart from seeing the deity who is Krishna, of course, but Krishna manifests in the deity in within the material elements. But those material elements, you know, is so that we can perceive the Lord, but actually, you know, Krishna is there. The Prema Bhaktis generally see the Lord. The Lord doesn't, even to the Bhava Bhaktis, he doesn't reveal his, you know, personal, you know, spiritual Satchitananda form. Although, you know, the Bhava Bhaktis, Bhaktas, as described here, by their intensity of their devotional service, you know, that they have, they can experience the presence of the Lord. So they can, you know, the Bhava Bhaktis can certainly experience the Lord is present in to such a state that they will experience transcendental ecstasy, you know, as if the Lord has just touched them, or as if they've heard the flute or smell. You know, there may be some aspect, one of their transcendental senses the presence of the Lord, so that can be there, the Bhava Bhaktis. Due to the intensity of their devotional service, generally the Lord reveals himself in his personal form to the Prema Bhaktis. So, and generally, you know, the Prema Bhaktis don't fall down, but the Prema Bhaktis don't fall down, but the Bhava Bhaktis may. Even if they, you know, it's rare, but they may, and they may, they may be on the level that they may have, you know, felt the presence of the Lord to the stage where it's just put them in transcendental ecstasy, and of course they're also regularly seeing the Lord and also perceiving the presence of the Lord within their hearing and chanting like that. So here Narada Muni is a Prema Bhakti when he, you know, saw the form of the Lord. Any other questions before we move on? Alright. There we are. Where the red dot is. So, so he met with death, changed his material body, the material body changed, and he immediately developed a spiritual body. Now this is a very important statement here by Srila Prabhupada with the red dot, that even before death the body is spiritualized like a red hot iron. We'll come back to that. In verse 28, Narada Muni describes that having the transcendental body he quit the material body. Right, now the reason, now we'll come back to this statement here in Prabhupada's purport. The transcendental body that Narada Muni was given, describes this somewhere that, you know, there's no difference between, where is it in the purport there somewhere that There's no distinction between the body and soul. Right? That's in the purport to text number 30. Right? The transcendental body of Narada Muni, there's no distinction between the body and soul. The previous body he had in the previous day of Brahma was a material body, but we have to understand that although he's saying, I quit the material body, that body is completely spiritualized. Because it is completely engaged in, like a red hot iron. So we should not take that Narada Muni is actually quitting a material body. Because that body that he quit was already spiritualized. But there is a distinction that body, you know, there's a difference in one sense between the body and the soul. Because that body was, the body, he's saying it's a material body in the sense that it was composed of the material elements. But it's not a material body in the sense that it's materially engaged, or that it's under the influence of the modes of material nature, or that it's suffering the reactions of karma. It's a material body simply because it's composed of the material elements, but it's being completely engaged in the service of the Lord, it is completely spiritualized. So it's important to understand that. Otherwise we think that how can a Prema Bhakti have a material body? So there's a sometimes with these verses you see that and you find this when you're speaking on the Bhagavatam or any of the scriptures, it's good to have an understanding of the whole topic, and certainly sometimes the verses before and after, some of the commentaries and important points that are there need to all be linked together and understood as a group. Otherwise it's so easy to just take one statement, pick up the book, today I'm giving class, you read that one purport and you can take something out of context if you're not in the practice of relating it to that section nicely. So therefore we see that in verse 29 he describes it the end of the millennium when Narayan in his Gavadaksha Vishnu lays down within the water of devastation, that he also entered through his breathing, he entered within Lord Narayan along with Brahma and everyone. And when Brahma awoke to create again, he also appeared. As Prabhupada says, Narada Muni appears in the same transcendental body. When he, in his previous life, when he changed the body composed of the material elements which had been spiritualized, and he was awarded his spiritual body where there was no difference between the body and soul, it was composed of Satchitananda, not composed of material elements, then that's the body that he appeared in the next millennium, just like a person waking up rather than taking birth in that sense. And then because of that transcendental body, of course, in the grace of the Lord, that he travels everywhere without restriction, being in devotional service. The last little part there, of course, because he's engaged in devotional service, it is showing the superiority of being engaged in bhakti yoga as compared to others who also appear with Brahma as Brahma's sons, like Marichi and the four Kumaras and what have you. Others appear as Brahma's sons, but they don't have the same traveling everywhere without restriction because they're not being fixed in devotional service. Some, like Marichi, may be engaged in fruitive activities or propagating fruitive activities, in which case they cannot go to the transcendental realm, and personalities like the four Kumaras, who are fixed in transcendental realization, don't like to go into the material universe. So they're restricted, they're fearful. But Narada Muni can go, in or out, material or spiritual, it makes no difference to him because he's fixed in devotional service. So this verse is actually highlighting the devotional service. And, so he's constantly singing the Lord's glories with his vina. And again, because we follow in the footsteps of Narada Muni, a self-realized soul should use sound meters in devotional service. Any questions? Or verse 26, of course, there was a question: describe the life of a sincere devotee as exemplified by Narada Muni, whose only business is to chant, remember, and preach for others' welfare. And describe Narada's transcendental body and activities. Transcendental body. He has a completely spiritual body, and his activities, of course, is because he's even before death, because his activities are completely transcendental, then his body has become spiritualized. So there. His transcendental bodies and activities. In other words, his transcendental bodies and his transcendental activities. Srila Prabhupada mentions in relation to verse number 33 that just as a person likes to hear his glories by others, enumerated by others, this quality is there in the Supreme Lord because he's a person. And because he's a person, he has that qualities, then therefore we also have that quality. It's very natural. So Srila Prabhupada always taking the opportunity to remind his readers of that principle. Always remember that the Supreme Lord is a person. Otherwise, why hear and chant? If he's not a person, what is the value in hearing and chanting, in one sense? It's because it's pleasing to that person. And Narada Muni says that, also a very important principle is that he can appear in the picture of his glorification, like spiritual television. So again, we have to these principles we are meant to relate to ourselves, personal application as well. We may think that when I hear and chant, I don't
the Supreme Lord doesn't appear. And it's just such a rare person like Narada Muni, you know. But we have to understand that even for the ordinary devotee, according to the intensity and the purity of their hearing and chanting, they will feel the presence of the Lord. So he appears and they will feel that presence of the appearance of the Lord, as we described. And you know, in the beginning our picture may be a little fuzzy, you know, you have to tune the television in, but the picture's there. The Lord is there with his form, his name, his pastimes, paraphernalia. Sometimes you ever tune the television and you know you got the sound, the form is just there, it is a bit fuzzy. So our devotional service can sometimes be like that, but it's there. And as we become purer in our devotional service, we can tune it in and we get the, you know, very clear picture without any interference, static. So therefore Narada Muni says, to cross the ocean of nescience on the most suitable boats. What is that? The constant chanting of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. And I think that's in the purport that Prabhupada describes it. You know, he descends. Or is that in the translation? He descends for the conditioned souls so that they can turn towards transcendence. Is that in the translation? It's in the translation, yeah. So, in verse 35, Radha Muni describes the yoga system is not sufficient for giving satisfaction. But satisfaction is derived from devotional service to the Supreme Lord. That's the essence of that. this has been, you know, gradually from the very beginning of Narada Muni's conversations with Srila Vyasadeva, who compiled the Vedic literatures, and in that there was, you know, many topics on Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha, and also little tinges of bhakti here and there, which certainly gives some satisfaction. So the Dharma, Karma, Artha and Moksha, without bhakti, Narada Muni says no satisfaction, that's useless. But you know, if there's a little bhakti there, then there's satisfaction to some degree, but certainly, so therefore the yoga system is not really giving the satisfaction, it's the bhakti element. And therefore, you know, you increase the bhakti element and you get the real satisfaction of the soul. This is his conclusion. Summing up from the very beginning of his conversation. We see, you know, the very problem that Narada, that Srila Vyasa had was, you know, his dissatisfaction. So he's answering that now, you know, summarizing that, you know, he's described this process that he's taken bhakti from the beginning, associating and developed that bhakti up to his pure stage, and that is given full satisfaction. And therefore, we see in the verse 36, the purport, that by hearing such an authority as Narada, one can have some idea about the results of devotional service, which are hardly delineated even in the original Vedas. Therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam is a mature fruit of all the Vedas. So
Śrīla Vyāsadeva inquired from the spiritual master Narada Muni, "Tell us about your personal life. You know, how you came to be such a nice devotee with a transcendental body, always engaged in the service of the Lord." That life story of a devotee, his practical story of, you know, that he and all the principles derived from it, the information that you get there is hardly, you know, traces of that are hardly found, you know, even in the original Vedas. Therefore, inquiries from the spiritual master, who's actually a pure devotee of the Lord, are very, very important. And the sum and substance of all that information, of course, is contained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore we see that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the mature fruit of all the Vedas. So Narada left to wander at his free will. and again, just showing the nature of devotional service, that when we surrender to Krishna, it means to attain complete freedom. Because every aspect of devotional service is actually based upon freedom from beginning to end. And as one becomes more and more surrendered to the Lord, actually he becomes, he attains more complete freedom. Generally people don't, you know, think of surrender in terms of freedom. It's like, Surrender usually means a loss of rights and freedom, but when you surrender to the Lord, it means to attain complete freedom. What is that freedom? You know, who'd like to be Narada Muni? You just, you know, 10 minutes, I might just pop up to Vaikuntha. I'll be back for evening prasadam. I'll bring you some. I'll tell you what, Lakshmi is like. You know, it's complete freedom. So Narada wanders everywhere, and this is in the last verse. Narada wanders everywhere. His mission is to get them back home, back to Godhead. This is the mission of all genuine devotees. That's from the purport, based upon the translation. And of course, in the purport to verse 26. Prabhupada elaborates on that, you know, this conclusion, the mission of a devotee to take everyone back to the spiritual world. Alright, any other questions? So if we were to say, what is the effect of hearing from such an authority as Narada, what would we say? Yeah. What's the best result? You can get an idea of the results of devotional service. Yes, yeah. That is a result of hearing from, you know, that is, you know, there are many results within that, but that's the main thing. Where else do you really get that sort of information? You know, is what are the results of devotional service as it's described? It's hardly there, even in the Vedas, in the original Vedas. But you approach someone like Narada Muni, and it's just thick with that information, and just rich. You get a really crisp, good, you know, full understanding. Oh, that's what devotional service does. It elevates you from, you know, Narada Muni, a mere boy who's able to, under the most severe circumstances, due to being situated in devotional service, to be able to see that as the mercy of the Lord, and then take that opportune moment and actually achieve complete perfection and it completely become one of the eternal associates of the Lord. A very powerful result. All right, any questions or comments? So there we've covered there's a lot of principles there, as you see. Keep in mind that these very short statements that I'm making here, just trying to squeeze everything in. Those principles, they can be expanded, nicely in your essays and what have you. But at least it gives the opportunity to identify them. And again, without Srila Prabhupada's purports are just so wonderful like that. We looked at this one up here. Even at the time of creation and annihilation, your remembrance will continue by my mercy. Because it just, for the average person, it doesn't dawn on them that that is the the devotional service is accumulating because the Lord's, he's remembering everything. Otherwise it can't accumulate. So it's a principle which is unstated in the verse. It's unstated in any of the verses around it. I should have Prabhupada has drawn it out that from that. So, but there are Srila Prabhupada, we should always be able to certainly draw out the main principles. We train our eye and our intelligence, and by practice we do this. And there are certain principles which Prabhupada doesn't always state all of them. Not necessarily in this section. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada, there are certain principles within his purports that he may wait until a later section of the Bhagavatam and then bring out that principle for certain reasons. And sometimes they're not fully stated in his books, but they're in the lectures that he gives. So, we're drawing out the main principles, and that's why it is important to go through his lectures as well. And verses on the Bhagavad Gita, which is sometimes related to these verses, you will find that some of the important principles, Srila Prabhupada may quote these verses when he's given a purport to the Bhagavad Gita, and you'll find that in that purport he'll draw out some other principles which are not stated. So we're not saying that this is the complete list. There are many, there are still some important principles and other secondary principles. There are many, and therefore that's why when you write the essays you may you've certainly got to be able to identify the main ones that are there. But then if you detect, because you've read one of his lectures or a purport related to this, if you detect other principles, then you can include them in your essays. But we see that there is a we have to sometimes be careful of not just being able to identify the storyline and not the principles that each aspect of the story is portraying. You know, sometimes that's what happens, you know, when we read, is that, you know, we may read how, you know, Narada Muni gave up his material body, so-called material body, attained a spiritual body, and was born again in the next millennium. So, you know, for a lot of people reading that, they probably don't see any principles there. But then if you look at it, you know, it's jam-packed with them, you know, important points, principles upon which, you know, devotional service is based upon, you know, our relationship with the Lord is based upon, principles which accentuate the personality of the Supreme Lord, that he is a person. And what have you? You know, if the you know, one of the principles of our whole movement, of course, is that God is a person. And you know, if he wasn't a person, you know, if we, you know, that's an important principle that we're basing practically everything we do upon, is that God is a person. A very important principle. If God wasn't a person, just think of all the things we wouldn't do, or that everything would change. That one principle. How important is that? So certain aspects of the storyline will highlight that, and when it does, we have to, you know, be able to spot it ourselves and then bring it to the attention of others. Yeah. So we do have, you know, there's one section that we haven't covered, but because we've covered so much today, I won't go into it, because, you know, it's quite philosophical. You know, the next part from verses 1 to 11, we've covered, you know, quite a lot of philosophy without much, a lot of activity today, so we'll leave that part till next week, and of course that gives you an extra week to do your essays as well. So next week would definitely be the last on this section, which means the following week will be the closed book test. Right, so in 2 weeks' time you'll hand in your essays and do the closed book test.
No. And we have to also describe in relation to preaching and personal application. So describe few of them.
Yes. let me get my. Let's have a look at that. What I do while we're discussing that, I will pass around the. Pass around the attendance sheet. Someone can put today's date on a new column. So, the open book essays, 900 to 1,000 words. You've got. What page is it in your actual book? 38. This is an amended version of that. Do you have one of them?
No.
Okay. Anyone else not got one of these? Yeah, I've got them. Yeah. Well, do you want to check? Yeah. Uh, Perhaps, do you want to do that after class, or? Yeah, probably after class. Anyone who's not sure can come up and just look at it. And I've got them here. I think I've only got this one copy left, so
we can
photocopy, yeah.
Or we can just write down here, you know. I don't think
there's not a lot of amendments.
Yeah.
The first part, so one is that, you know, it's 900 to 1,000 words.
900 to 1,000.
Yeah, I think that's about 2 or 3 pages.
So 2 or 3 pages for all these points?
Yes.
Okay.
One essay with the sort of covers all these points. And explaining, so this hasn't changed, this part, that explaining the reasons for Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction, as described in chapters 4 and 5, with appropriate analogies and Sanskrit phrases from appropriate verses. And identify some general principles, as we've been doing over the last few weeks, which can be drawn from Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction. And the life of life example of Narada, and explain the relevance of these principles in terms of personal and preaching application, and finally to select Sanskrit phrases and statements from purports and lectures from 5:10-15 which reflect Prabhupada's mood and mission, and explain what these statements mean to you and how they affect your life. So for generic thinking, presentation skills, 2 marks. As we described, don't make me work too hard trying to connect your points, you know. Edit what you've done so that it's quite clear, you know, how one point leads into the next, or, you know, why, you know, you make one statement and that it is related to the next statement and somehow. It's generic thinking and presentation skills, you know, using things such as paragraphs and full stops and punctuation and all those sort of things. And as I explained, you know, a whole lot of points, like almost like a list, and then, you know, a couple of statements underneath. You know, each point, for instance, where it says here, identifies some general principles which can be drawn from Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction in the life of Narada, and explain the relevance of these principles in terms of personal and preaching. So, not that we want a list of those principles and then sort of one group statement about how this personally affects me. You know, all of these principles up here affect me in this way, this one way. What we want is, how does this principle affect you, and how does this principle affect you? You know, see what I mean? You know, this principle, there's a personal application in this way, and a preaching application in this way. Not just, you know, that whole bunch of them. You know, you know, affects me. A personal application, I think, is very important. I think they're very important. And I'll try and apply them. What's that?
Cross-reference.
Yeah, take a principle and work on it, you know, without being too, you know, verbose, or, you know, be clear and precise, but, you know, and have a nice you know, this something that is quite a clear, personal, unique. You know, again, as I explained last time, personal application, we don't mean, yes, I will chant 16 rounds, follow the four regal principles, come to the temple more often. We're all doing that anyway, you know, so it's not incorrect, and you can say those things, but plus a little bit more, but I don't need, you know, all the trauma that may be affecting, you know, everybody, but just some personal application.
Right? Yeah.
Some of the principles you may very easily see a personal application, and some of them you may, you know, like to explain its preaching application, you know, so you don't have to do both for each one necessarily. You know, as we said, we've covered a lot of principles, there's a lot there, so you know, you select some and be very careful. What I notice some students do is they will make the same statement again, even two or three times, just wording it, you know, moving the sentences around. I'm not sure how you do it, but
it is but
try and make a completely different statement to the previous one. I'm not looking at anybody. So that's generic and presentation skills, but it does also reflect your understanding that, you know, understanding, there's 8 points for understanding. That means you can actually accurately identify, you know, the reasons for the acidosis, dissatisfaction, and, you know, you give proper references and, you know, the analogies for the right reason and Sanskrit phrases and what have you. You know, and do the same for Narada's life. So understanding means you can spot the principles, and you can spot the reasons and what have you, and you can back that up with references. Try and do a little bit of each.
No, I'm saying it should be a single essay with both.
Yes, it's a single essay, and you're from Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction, and then how Narada, from his own life, resolved that, and how Srila Prabhupada, how that reflects in Prabhupada's mood and mission. You know, there is a bit of a flow on there, and that sort of flow should be there. There should be some consistency for those three main things as well. So in other words, if someone just identifies only Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction, mentions nothing about Narada or Prabhupada's mood and mission, that's not what we want. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you don't have to identify, you know, all the principles that we've covered, but certainly you're writing one essay. It is an essay. So, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. not just a group of statements here, another group there, and then a little something down the bottom. It's, you know, something that flows logically, reasonably. It shows that you've understood what you're writing about, and you've understood it, and you can give proper references.
When it comes to Sanskrit, can you make a reference to the Sanskrit, or you want
If you make a Sanskrit reference, means you write the Sanskrit.
Yeah, You can't say Bhagavad Gita 5.26.
No.
You have to say state
it. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't mean you have to. If you. You know, for instance, if you say, see the Sanskrit in chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita, well, there's too much Sanskrit there, you know. If the particular point you're making refers to just a part of that Sanskrit sloka, then utilize that, and it shows that you properly understand the Sanskrit. You know, that's better than just quoting the whole, you know, just, you might write the Sanskrit for the whole sloka, but you're only really at that point of the essay discussing Jagupsa Dhamma, or, you know, just one particular aspect of it. You know, we discussed as an example, Apachita Kilabhisha, right? So if you're describing how all my sins were Kilabhisha, the sins Apachita eradicated, and it's referring to how by once taking the remnants all his sins were eradicated. If that's the particular point that you're making, there's no need to state the whole verse of Sanskrit. Just those two words. That shows that you really understand the Sanskrit better. Prabhupada was very expert at that. he could easily quote the whole sloka, but. He would just select the word or the couple of words from that sloka, which for the exact point he was making. No use to recite the whole sloka. And then, of course, there's personal application and preaching application. Now, for personal application, I've said two marks. You explain with relevance to some general principles from their lives. In your own life, how that's relevant to you, and again, it's not that you can't make general statements like chanting 16 rounds and what have you. You can do that, but certainly add a little bit of uniqueness to your devotional service as well. And. I've given more marks for preaching application because we want to try and develop that ability to see things with regard to preaching application, and also for mood and mission. So I've given again more marks, so there's four marks for preaching application on mood and mission. There should be something on personal application to get a couple of marks. There should be a little bit more on the preaching and the mood and mission, at that. And again, we discuss on mood and mission how certain statements, either in Prabhupada's purports, lectures, or the Sanskrit, very much. are directly relevant to Prabhupada's mission. ISKCON, directly relevant to ISKCON, the main things that we do in Prabhupada's mood. Alright, any questions? So next week we finish off the beginning of chapter 7, verses 1 to 11, I think it is. And we'll just have a general discussion at the end about this whole unit, and even if I ask you now, just how would you compare this doing unit 2 as compared to unit 1? It's easier, yeah. In what way? Right, yeah. Okay. Right, that's good. Yeah, that's good. Anyone else think it's getting easier, or does someone think it's getting tougher? Right. I was leaving a lot more work up to the students here. Yeah.
It was worse, but still our understanding might be, at my level, my understanding is not so much that if you just go over few things, you will understand.
Yeah.
Even though I come prepared for this class and that class, this is, I'm able to observe more, rather than.
I did point that out with Atul Krishna when he was here. That I asked him that, I thought that one of the dangers I could see from having too much, experiential learning, too much, is that the teacher doesn't get the opportunity to pass on as much information as the students may require, and he agreed that, that is there. So I'm trying to find that balance between making sure that you get as much information that you require that you may not pick up in your own reading or study, and at the same time make it a good experience.
Like in another chapter, we all made plural graphs,
yeah,
presentation.
Yeah.
We could understand how to take out the principles from practically doing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, listening to this session, we understood much.
There's a lot more to come. Yeah. That's good. Any other comments? Or? Yeah, that's good.
This way of explaining is much easier to relate.
Yeah, that's good.
And it's on the board, so something goes on.
And then you can, keep those notes. So
especially the March section is most important for the 15 months. So if that sections are presented in this manner.
It's a fact, yes. Certain sections do take, this covers from the beginning of devotional service up to Prema Bhakti,
yeah.
Leaving, your body and developing a spiritual body. There's a lot there, yeah. So certain, some sections you can, it's a little easier, and we can then let the students have a bit of a play with it and have a bit of fun. Alright, thanks for those feedbacks. If anyone needs to take a copy of those there, I'll leave them there for maybe 10 minutes or so. I think just confer amongst yourselves. Some people have got some things that so basically there are some new notes that may help you, and we'll see you next week.